Kia ora. Ko Phil Smith ahau. Nau mai ki te whare. Welcome to the House. A lot of legislation goes through Parliament without anything particularly dramatic occurring, without campaigns or protests or firebrand speeches or actually much news coverage. A lot of bills pass with all or at least most of the parties saying, yeah, you know, that's a reasonable idea. And yet even those quieter bills often generate quite a lot of public engagement, the kind where people make submissions for changes and improvements to the select committee that's putting a new bill through its paces. For example, there's a bill currently before select committee that seeks to create oversight for water supplies, the Water Services Bill. Now, it might sound reasonably prosaic, and it was generally agreed to in the House, but it still generated substantial public feedback from various groups and communities, marae and organisations that it would affect, totalling nearly 1,000 submissions.
And the isotope evidence and interpretation shows that the water in our well is some 400 years old. So you'll understand why for us it seems somewhat illogical to be having to treat and monitor on a monthly basis water that's some 400 years old, encapsulated within a confined aquifer lens 32 and a half metres down with an artesian head.
Water supply, it turns out, is a complex and varied issue. Most things are. Those kinds of public submissions can help to ensure that governments don't create unintended local consequences while attempting to solve larger problems. So it's worth keeping an eye out for what bills are up for submissions. This week, there were four new bills that cleared their first hurdle, the first reading, and are now going out for wider public consultation. So here's a quick rundown on what they are, in case one of them's in your bailiwick. We'll start with the Mental Health Compulsory Assessment and Treatment Amendment Bill.
Honourable Andrew Little.
Present a legislative statement on the Mental Health Compulsory Assessment and Treatment Amendment Bill.
That legislative statement is published under the authority of the House and can be found on the Parliament website.
Now, while we're at it, it's worth noting a new rule that's in effect this Parliament. Before they crack into their opening speech for the first reading, the minister in charge of a bill now tables what's called a legislative statement. It's basically an explanation of the bill. Those intros are collected as parliamentary papers, available online, and quite useful primers. Something like those statements used to make up the bulk of a minister's first reading speech. They were often educational, but they were also really dry. Ministers are no longer able to read them out, but they do still do some explaining.
Those indefinite treatment orders will go. They will be any order for treatment, compulsory order for treatment, will have to be reviewed at the end of a 12-month period at the very least. And so that will make a big difference. The second thing that this amending legislation amends is the ability for those patients who are under a compulsory treatment order who need to be transported can be transported safely, that there will be some ability to provide some restraint.
That was Andrew Little, the Minister of Health. Without all the turgid prose, ministers now have more time for waxing political.
You know, add to that the establishment of the Mental Health and Wellbeing Commission, add to that the establishment of the Suicide Prevention Office, none of it acknowledged by the members opposite. They bury their heads in the sand because they don't want to know that it's happening, because they so badly ran down the system, they are terrified that actually it's going to now start to get better.
And of course, politics begets politics. Here's National's mental health spokesperson, Matt Ducey.
Madam Speaker, I was going to come down and just deliver a fairly perfunctory speech on what is a very technical bill, but after that last speech from that minister, that is a minister under pressure, who used his opportunity to talk about a bill to defend his government's performance in mental health.
And also from National, Shane Retty added some interesting perspective.
To get some scope as to how many people are involved in compulsory treatment orders, we know roughly 10,000 people a year are subject to the Mental Health Act, and that at any one time, 102 people per 100,000 are receiving compulsory treatment.
Despite the politics, this bill is actually largely agreed on, which is more common than you might think. The Health Select Committee is now seeking public feedback on the Mental Health Compulsory Assessment and Treatment Amendment Bill. Submissions are open until the 19th of May. Also passing a first reading on Tuesday was the Incorporated Societies Bill from David Clark. The bill modernises the expectations and the rules for incorporated societies. And before you doze off, here's why that matters.
24,000 incorporated societies in New Zealand are commonly known as clubs, associations or federations, and they operate for no financial gain for their members. They arrange the sporting events for our kids, the coaches in our clubs, the environmental petitions that they bring, and enriching marae with Māori cultural values.
They also include things like the New Zealand Rugby Union and about 5,000 different charities. It's not particularly controversial, but regardless, I expect there will be plenty of submissions on how it could be better. The third new bill on the horizon this week is the Social Security Subsequent Child Policy Removal Amendment Bill. This one is politically controversial because it undoes a change that the previous National-led government had made to benefit rules. I'll let Labor MP Angie Warren-Clark attempt to explain the current rule that's being done away with.
So, mum has one child and receives a sole parent benefit currently. Mum has the following work obligations currently at this point. So she has the work preparation obligations of the first child if the child is under three. So is at home, is caring, but is doing work prep. Okay, so that's the first step. Second step, part-time work obligations if the child is aged 3 and above to 14 years. And then after 14 years, full-time work obligations if the child is 14 years or over. Okay, so that's what's in place at the moment. Now, if mum has a second or a subsequent child, as we call it, once that child turns 1, then they have to go to step 3, full-time work obligations. That's how it works, and that does not take into account anything to do with the family circumstances or what's best for the children or the children of that family.
Yes, it's complicated. Solo parents on main benefits have been able to gain support to stay at home for 3 years with their first child, but a second child was only given that largesse until they were 1. After that, it was the age of the elder child that was counted for work expectations and for possible benefits sanctions. Labor MP Priyanka Radhakrishnan spoke on behalf of the minister in charge of the bill.
The policy's primary focus was on requiring parents to return to work as early as possible after having a subsequent child. However, there is no evidence to suggest that the policy has reduced time on benefit or improved financial or social outcomes. In fact, it disproportionately impacts Māori and women, has contributed to increasing complexity in the welfare system and reduced flexibility for parents to spend time with their child or children.
For Te Pāti Māori, Debbie Narewa-Packer.
This policy, previously introduced by National, has been extremely punitive and cruel and has done more harm than good, already marginalising predominantly Māori and yes, wahine. By removing this policy, parents and caregivers can do exactly that, parent and caregive, without fear of ridicule and shame. This policy smacked of beneficiary bashing. It's actually shame, wakama, that has taken our whānau out and clean us. It's the shame of being able to be too wakama to ask for help.
National spokesperson on this is Louise Upston, who had a different take.
So of the children, and there are thousands of them in New Zealand who live in material hardship, 60% of them are in benefit-dependent homes. So to put measures in place that keep their parents, keep their families dependent on benefits is just plain wrong. It is totally and absolutely wrong. To remove the expectation, to remove the aspiration of that family being a working family and keeping them as a benefit-dependent family is plain and simply wrong.
ACT MP Karen Shaw.
Working parents would love to stay home for 3 years, but sometimes they can't. And they feel forced to go back to work. Are we now saying they shouldn't go back to work? Are we saying that they should feel bad for going to work and leaving their children and not spending the first 1,000 days with their kids?
The Social Services Committee is accepting submissions on this bill until May 21st. Those three bills that are now up for public consultation are all government bills. The fourth bill, just through its first reading, is not. It's a members' bill, a bill proposed by an MP not in the executive, a backbencher.
Wear sunscreen. If I could offer you one piece of advice for your future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen...
That was Labour's Glenn Bennett riffing on a bill that seeks to test and regulate the effectiveness of sunscreens against their claims. The bill is in the name of National MP Todd Muller, who lamented how regulations in New Zealand have fallen behind those in Australia.
But in New Zealand, compliance is voluntary. And the result, Madam Speaker, is that many sunscreens do not meet the promise of the label. They say they are broad spectrum. They say they are SPF 50 or a similarly higher number. But actually, when tested, they do not deliver that claim. In 2019, Madam Speaker, Consumer New Zealand tested 20 sunscreens and 9 products did not meet the SPF claim on the label. In 2020, they tested a further 10 sunscreens and 5 failed the SPF claim.
The bill flew through its first reading debate with support from all comers, though Labor did note that it has a bill already under construction, the Therapeutic Products Bill, that it would like to see regulating sunscreen as well. The General Committee allowed time for various speakers to point out related issues, like that covering up is not just for pale-skinned Pākehā. Here's Labour's Anai Neru Liavasa.
Mr Speaker, it's really important not only for our fair-skinned populations, also for, I guess, my Pacific Islanders as well. It's important because there's always a risk to get skin cancers.
And from the Greens, Elizabeth Kerikeri.
We know that Aotearoa has the highest rate of melanomas in the world. Although Māori and Pacifica are much less likely to get them, when we do, we have a higher risk of thick and more advanced melanoma with a poorer prognosis. Whereas for non-Māori, it is predominantly men who get melanomas, for some reason for Māori, it is predominantly women.
The Sunscreen Product Safety Standard Bill now goes to the Health Committee, which will ask for public submissions very soon. You've been listening to The House. E te whakarongo koe ki te whare, e hotaka a poake nā teitahi puti āwhina, no mai, i te paramata. Mā te wā.